Hi, and welcome back to Travel Notes, a show where we use music as a medium to explore ways in which we are all connected. If you're just tuning in via the FM dial, thanks for listening to WOHM Radio 96.3 FM, Charleston's independent, commercial-free radio station. I'm your host, Grace McNally, and I'm so excited for today's show because we're going somewhere we've never been before on Travel Notes. We are going to go to the southernmost island in the Caribbean, just off the coast of Venezuela. Perhaps most musically well known for their steel drums, thanks to their economy's heavy reliance on petrochemicals and petroleum. You may have heard of this island called Trinidad and Tobago. Our cultural liaison will be Trinidadian and Toronto-based musician Drew Gonzalez, founder of the Calypso group Cobotown. Together, we get to know the complex, diverse, and compact country of Trinidad and Tobago through the musical genre of Calypso and Cobotown's newest album, Carnival of Ghosts. To give you a little bit of an idea about Cobotown, they continue to redefine Calypso music and push the boundaries of the Caribbean sound. Behind the running social commentary and satirical mood in their 2022 album, Carnival of Ghosts, is a collection of songs ultimately about the human condition, about our quirks and foibles, our anxieties and hopes, and the haunting sense of impermanence that imbues our every moment with its urgency and priceless worth. Cobotown has been described as an intoxicating blend of lilting calypsonian wit, dancehall reggae, and trombone heavy brass, and a unique transnational composite of rhythm, poetry, and activist journalism. Since their founding in 2005, the group has brought their distinct calypso and ska-inspired sound to audiences across the world. I'm so excited to introduce to you Drew Gonzalez of Cobotown. Okay, Drew, welcome to Travel Notes.
Grace, thanks so much for chatting with me.
My pleasure. I'm so glad Derek connected us and exposed me to your music because it's really, really cool. And it was fun to dive into the Calypso world and learn a little bit about it. We're going to dive into your music and your newest album, Carnival of Ghosts, which I'm excited to share with everyone. Before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about Calypso music? Like, how did it come about?
Sure. I mean, Calypso music has a long history in Trinidad. It's funny, I was once giving this presentation on the history of the music, and I gave the ultimate Calypso history geek joke. I said, it all started with some bourbon. And then I paused and I said, with some bourbon reforms, that is, right? And I could see the grimace on the faces of some people, but I just couldn't help it. Trinidad was this like backwater colony of the Spanish Empire, right? And towards the latter part of the 1700s, like the Spanish got the sense that the English were eyeing it rather greedily. So they decided to populate it and, boost the population. And they did this. And it was during these Bourbon reforms that were reforming their colonies. And so they encouraged this migration from the French islands. They wanted fellow Catholics to settle in Trinidad. And it was around the time of the stirring up of the Haitian Revolution. Mm-hmm. The Haitian Revolution. So a lot of planters and slaves moved from the French islands to Trinidad. And so for like the ensuing like 100 years after that, Calypso was mostly sung in French Creole. And even though the island was captured by the British, they still kept encouraging these French planters to come because they were developing, like the cocoa and then later the sugar industry. And then, so the island had this French Creole character despite never being ruled by France, but they had all of this Creolized West African influenced and French Antillean influenced music that came to the island. And over time, what started off as more like call and response chants, something that we called laves, started to do two things, like started to grow into these more topical, longer like storytelling forms of songs. And then they started being sung in the English language as, the island became over a couple of generations, like a majority English-speaking island. And so Trinidad, like, you know, it's been in Trinidad, Calypso is called many things. One of the things it's called is the people's newspaper, because it was a way that people heard about things, you know, everything from global events to gossip and innuendo and whatnot. And it, you know, it was like a running commentary on everything that was going on in the society and in the wider world. And and Calypso enjoyed a few like brief moments in its history where it really captured the attention of the wider world. One was, I think, in the 1920s and 30s, when the first waves of singers, Calypsonians, started settling in New York and London and other places. And then with this Calypso craze at the end of World War II, when all these American servicemen came back to the States, where there was a huge base in Trinidad, a naval base, and they brought the stories of this music, and then, you know, the interest in it, you know, led to like the careers and was pioneered in America by people like Harry Belafonte and the Mighty Charmer, which was the stage name of Louis Farrakhan, and who was a Calypso singer in his youth. So So it went through this period where it was very, very popular, and then it sort of faded away again. And then it, you know, a few years ago, Calypso Rose's album really blew up in Europe, and it also, you know, had a moment of popularity then. But all along, as this has been happening, you know, in Trinidad, you know, the venue that Calypso is sung is called a tent, and I always encourage anybody who's going to go to Trinidad and go to Calypso Tent, I would say, you know, read the news for like 2 weeks before, because especially the local news, because then you'll get all the names and, you know, that they're commenting upon, it's so much more fun when sometimes if they're talking about local stuff, you know what they're talking about. And there's this Calypso Tent scene that has always existed in Trinidad and in other islands. And of course, everywhere there's a diaspora, there's a Calypso scene here in Toronto as well. That's of course where you see the music also always fulfilling its original function, which is to, you know, amuse and entertain, but also to provoke people to think and look at things from different angles. And I hope that was not too rambling a history.
No, my gosh, I love that. That was so perfect and so interesting. And I love that you gave really a nice background on it. And you touched on this a little bit, but who would you say were some of the first Calypso musicians in society?
So the first Calypso musicians that we know about are really from the early 1800s there and mid 1800s. There was a fellow that went by the name of William the Conqueror, and and another fellow called Norman LeBlanc, and somebody called Tijan, another fellow called Grosjean. And that was the earliest Calypsonians. And what's very interesting is that they came from very opposite sides of society. You know, William the Conqueror was a planter, and Grosjean was a slave, right, born as a slave. And one of the things I've always found interesting about Calypso is that it's really the product of a country with a very complex history. You know, it's very hard to boil it down to like simple dichotomies, you know? And it's, you know, it's a multifaceted music of a very multifaceted island. And moving down the years, I remember the one I just mentioned, William the Conqueror, I think he was known, Norman LeBlanc, for was some of the first few calypsos that were like written down, the lyrics were published, and they were mostly unflattering ditties about the current English governor. Mm-hmm. And then later on, they had felt like Lord Executor, and in the 1920s and 30s was the era of Roaring Lion. And then these all collectively became known as the Old Brigade. And the old, very folkloric character of Calypso that had carried on like melodically from the French islands was very, very dominant in that music. And then after, in the 1950s or so, was the rise of like the Lord Kitchener and the Mighty Sparrow, and this generation of Calypsonians that call themselves the Young Brigade. And they experimented it a lot harmonically. They really changed the types of chords and the approach to melodies in the music. It became much more varied during that time. And then like all the way down to our time, you know, we have still some of the great old Calypsonians are performing now and then, even though they're not in great health, like Mighty Sparrow and Calypso Rose. And then there's a whole new generation of people that have been inspired by it, or Calypsonians themselves, like a guy called Sugar Aloes and one called Crocro, who are very, write a lot of very political calypsos. And then here in Canada, yeah, we have a number of people that have been sort of championing the art for many, many years. One of them is called Makome Afifi. She's like Canada's calypso queen. And she, you know, she writes, you know, great songs, and a lot of which they deal with local issues here in Toronto. Like one of her most popular songs was about our controversial mayor, Rob Ford. And in every generation, I think going back to the early 1800s has produced its own crop of Calypsonians. And Calypso, interestingly, was always influenced by music from the outside. You know, in the 1920s, it's very influenced by American jazz and big band. In the 70s, you could hear a very disco and funk character to Calypso. And so it's a music that's always like absorbing new stuff into itself.
Sure. It's pretty fascinating. One thing I really didn't know, that there is these like satirical, they sound a little bit satirical, some of them, like though some of the earlier ones you were mentioning, names of the Calypso artists. Is that on purpose or?
Yes, absolutely. Calypso is part of this whole defiant kind of like culture that probably came out of stick fighting in Trinidad. Carnival used to be dominated by groups of stick fighters that used to meet each other at various parts of the city, and there'd be groups of them representing different neighborhoods, and they always took on these really fearsome names for themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. And also odd names, like some of them are called like, you know, Le Maribon, which means like the wasps, you know, because of the sting of their sticks. And another group called itself Free Grammar, like English grammar. And I don't know what inspired that that title. But interestingly, steel bands also had these fearsome names, like the Desperados and the Renegades and the Invaders. And there was a big steel band in the early days called the Red Army. And Calypsonians, yeah, were always like that. Like from the, like one of the first ones we know of was called William the Conqueror. And one of the great Calypsonians of the 30s and 40s, he called himself Attila the Hun. And he was actually the deputy mayor of Port of Spain, and he wrote a history of one of the first histories of the music as well, too.
Wow, so fascinating. I am like totally loving this. So one of the things you mentioned with the stick fighting reminded me of capoeira in Brazil, and I don't know if there's any cultural, potentially, I mean, the West African influences potentially in roots there, but how capoeira art, you know, martial artists would have like their own names too. Usually I'm not aware of like how, if they're, what kind of nature, if they're kind of more, what kind of names they would be, but I know that you get like a name when you do capoeira, which sounds like similar in the stick fighting, which is cool.
It is very much similar in the sense too that they're both a fighting art and a musical art, because
Yes.
just like capoeira is, accompanied by all its percussions and singing, calenda, which is a stick fighting art of Trinidad, which is going through a bit of a revival now, it also had the same thing. Groups of drummers would gather in a circle, and then on each side, representing both contestants, there'd be also a singer, like two singers representing each of them, and they would like sing these boasts and taunts of like the prowess of their own stick fighters, and they would mock the other side, and the calypso grew out of that music. It was that taunting, mocking, stick fighting music that eventually turned into what we call calypso. And so yeah, the comparison with capoeira is a really good one.
Amazing. Well, and I would love to segue and talk about your personal connection to this music. Like, how did you, what drew you to the Calypso?
You know what? I was really drawn to it in my adolescence. After I left Trinidad in my early teens, in the middle of high school, and until that point, I was not very interested in it, even though I heard it all the time. I mean, we lived down the street. Lord Kitchener lived up the road from us, and it was, of course, everywhere, heard everywhere in Trinidad. But my aspirations as a kid was to be a heavy metal musician. I had a little heavy metal band
Nice.
with my friends, and we didn't have the best instrumentation for that type of music. We had some broken down quattros and an improvised drum kit. But when I came to Canada, I really I was a bit, for lack of a better word, like shy and maladjusted, and I miss home a lot. And I started reading a lot about like the history of the Caribbean and of Trinidad particularly. And as you know, as I suppose, as a way to fulfill this, satisfy this like nostalgia that I already had for it. And one of my friends gave me a recording of old time calypsos, and it was a compilation of calypsos from the 1920s onwards. And I was completely blown away. I mean, and the thing that captured me really about it was that it could be very serious without taking itself too seriously. And it could be dress heavy things without losing its sense of humor. And I found that very captivating about it. And after that, anytime I'd go back to Trinidad to visit my father, who remained down there, he would take me, or we'd go to Calypso tents where I would get to see it live. But I came to the music from outside of it. Some people like Calypso Rose, I worked with her on her last recording, and she told me how she got her name from the Lord Pretender, because as a little girl she hung around the tents as a young girl, and just I don't have that type of connection with it. It's something that I found from the outside. I went hunting for old records and CDs and in music stores used that sold used LPs and whatnot, and I ended up, as I was already a musician writing songs, it just started flooding into my music, all this calypso influence. And then so when I started, Cobo Town was a very conscious attempt to go to the roots of the music and find inspiration to make new music from it.
Sure. That's awesome. And I was actually, my next question is about the name of your band, Kobo Town. Where does it come from? Does it have,
It comes from a neighborhood in Trinidad that doesn't really exist anymore. But it kept popping up over and over and over in the history of Calypso, this neighborhood called Cobo Town, where all of these performers came from, all of these performances happened. And it was two things. It was a center for a lot of the stick fighting matches that were happening, the calendar fights. But it was also close to the wharf, so it was also a place where it was frequented by sailors. And sailors back then were a great means of transporting songs from one place to another. You know, they would arrive in Trinidad with these songs from Jamaica and Panama and Central America and Barbados, and then they would carry the songs back with them. So a lot of these calypsos found themselves into the folk musics of other islands and countries as well too. So this place kept popping up, and I decided to, you know, when we were first, you know, try to sort out what name our band was going to be called. We actually started recording and all that before we had a name, and it just occurred to me that let's name it after this place, one of the important points of origin for this music.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. So let's definitely talk about your album, Carnival of Ghosts. excuse me. And in what ways do you think this album redefines calypso and pushes boundaries of Caribbean music?
So I suppose, I mean, I've never really thought of myself as a redefiner of calypso. I mean, calypso has always been a growing, changing art. And this is just one more branch on the tree, our band and its project. Just like calypso has absorbed all these other sounds throughout its history, so has my music. It's absorbed a lot of sounds and ideas through the course of my life, and they just come out in the music. Like, I don't really set out to redefine anything. But I think in the end, you know, anybody's music is often, so unique and individual just to them because, you know, sure, it's a product of a life that only they have lived. And so with myself, you know, with my approach to calypso music, I mean, I certainly try to be reverent, but, you know, my head is always so full of these other songs, and I just write what feels natural to me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this album, you know, while all of my albums lyrically are all over the place, sometimes I sit back and just for the sake of finding a name, I go, okay, what's a dominant theme? Okay, and on Where the Galleon Sang, the previous album, the dominant theme was musing over historical moments or places. And so Where the Galleon Sank, I remembered, you know, this trip I took on a boat and looking at these shadows of sunken ships, and the thought came to me. And for this one, Carnival of the Ghosts, a lot of the songs deal in various ways with, you know, mortality. You know, I'm at a point in my life where I realize that, you know, if I'm very lucky, like, I'm more than halfway through.
That's real.
You know, I have kids that are growing up. I have, like people, you know, that we love have passed on, and so a lot of the album is filled with the sense that things are so beautiful and so brief, and of course the songs take various approaches to this feeling.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, because it's cool to hear the background, and that's so real, such a real topic to address that really, I think, as humans, you know, we all face at some realization at some point of our own mortality and those around us, you know, and ones we love. What are some of the social issues and commentary you hope to convey through this album, if any, and how do you think they relate to the current cultural climate in Trinidad or perhaps in Toronto or the world?
Sure. I'm not sure if this album is really meant to, I really felt like it addresses very, very specific political themes. But I think that a lot of the political themes that reoccur so often throughout our long and troubled human history are really things that come from our own flaws as people, our own weird quirks and foibles, as human beings. And so some of the songs on this album That's more what they poke at. You know, one of them, the grass is greener, is really about envying people the things that they have, and they're not feeling satisfied when one has got them oneself. You know, another song, Bourne's Road, is actually I wrote new lyrics to sort of an old Calypso love way, a call and response refrain, but it's about something very specific and a historical corporal in St. James, who was known for abusing his authority, and he was a police corporal, and he was eventually killed. But the song is about the overreach and abuse of power, which is something that can happen in so many ways and in so many situations.
Sure. I love that one. I was listening, Bourne's Road. Yeah. What instrument is it guitar or something else?
That scratch, there is a guitar playing, but the one that you're hearing there is a cuatro. It's same as a Venezuelan cuatro, the Trinidad cuatro. It's a little four-string ukulele-like instrument.
So cool. It's the melody, the way it was being played reminded me of an artist I heard in Brazil, actually, who played on he tuned his guitar differently, but or it could have been a cavaquinho at one point, but he plays in that kind of, with that, it sounded kind of the rhythm and the melody, the way things were kind of moving just reminded me of it, but really, really beautiful. So the other three tracks we're going to play is Carnival of Ghosts, The Hidden Hand, and then Down by the Water, and we'll end with Bourne's Road. Tell me about this first in the title track of your album, Carnival of Ghosts.
Sure. I always tell people that for me, my favorite Calypso sounds like gossip, or it sounds like tall tales. and so this song is a bit of like a dream sequence. And the idea is that the singer, the protagonist, has passed out because he was feeling sick or faint or out of drunkenness at carnival time. And he wakes up and the streets that were previously filled with people and filled with noise and music are all empty. And he feels consoled a bit when he hears a carnival band coming down the road. But as they approach him, he sees that they are spirits of the dead. There's a carnival of the ghosts. And as they pass him, various historical personalities, Julius Caesar, Shah Jahan, who built the Taj Mahal, King Herod, etc. As they pass him, they all give him words of warning or advice or you know, as they are, you know, bouncing down the road to their own music.
Let's take a listen to Carnival of Ghosts. I hope you enjoy.
One carnival, I was jumping with a band. Started feeling faint and passed out by the stand. I don't know how long I lay there on the ground, but when I came to my senses, there was no one else around. It was the dead of night when I scrambled to my feet. The wind howling like a beaten dog, dragging rubbish down the street. I hear the shuffling of feet, the rattling of bones, saw the whole place bathing a spectral glow. And as night follows day, was the spirits of the dead come out to play. I was a man from the land of the living, and I thought my senses were deceiving, cause I was seeing but was not believing what was happening all around. You could imagine how I was trembling to see all them zombies assembling, then to notice some of them resembling people I heard about. In a big green turban was Shah Jahan, quarreling with a young woman. He said, girl, you make me ball. I can't believe for you, I believe Taj Mahal. King Herod say, hey boy, don't fret. Your SC don't dish for woman yet. For 2,000 years now, I never ate. Since I put John the Baptist's head on a plate. I was a man from the land of the living. You could imagine just how I was feeling. My knees were knocking and my mind was reeling. Too frightened to scream. could imagine just how I was shaking. So I feel like a man of forsaken, hoping that he would just awaken from this dreadful dream. Roxy Theater, I saw what looked like a Roman emperor. It was Julius Caesar coming down, daggers in his back, laurels on his brow. He said I had legions at my command, still I got stuck like a pin cushion. His wife said, man, you didn't have no sense to know you must never turn your back on your friends. I was a man from the land of the living, in that carnival and the ghost not reveling. The whole wild, the rhythm compelling me to join the parade. I was a man from the land of the living, and I confess that my flesh was tingling to find myself now mingling in that masquerade. Shaka Zulu whining on Catherine the Great, Genghis Khan and Casanova arguing who was the greater conqueror. They were prancing all around when there was a commotion in the crowd. It was King Henry VIII running for his life, chased down the road by six angry wives. I was a man from the land of the living. You could imagine how it was upsetting to know there was no way of getting back to my native land. You could imagine just how I was grieving, so no, there was no way now of living. So I had to abandon the plan and go jump in the dead man van.
That was Carnival of Ghosts by Kobo Town, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to OM Radio 96.3 FM. This is Travel Notes, and we are talking with Drew Gonzalez of the Calypso group Kobo Town. Let's dive back into our conversation. And what is The Hidden Hand about?
The Hidden Hand, I suppose, is a bit of a reflection on this sense that things are not in ultimately in our control, that we have. I feel that there are many ideologies of the present time or of the past century that have really emphasized the idea that that things are predetermined, you know, by forces that are ultimately out of the control of the individual. And so I guess The Hidden Hand is a bit of a criticism of that, you know, and of these deterministic ideas that rob the person of their agency and the feeling that their actions and their choices like matter in this world.
Let's take a listen to Hidden Hand.
Hidden on it than forcing command. Doesn't have a brain, but they say he's got a plan. Unknown, unseen, behind the scenes. Cause behind the laws that affect you and me, he's the abstraction that provides the distraction. Does the will to settle for inaction. Lulls the mind to sleep like a child come to cheap. Keeps the angels in the heavens and the dragons in the deep. Who would provide the hidden hand? Who could decide the hidden hand? Who would deny? Strings, the hidden hand oversees everything. The hidden hand. Who could override the hidden hand? The hidden hand has no tears to flow. No heart guides the hand that wields control over the fate of states, the lives of men. To make his ends their means and all their means his end. He's the locomotive that supplies the motive to divide the flock between the lost and chosen. To decide who the accident of birth will leave out in the dark or inherit the earth. Who would provide
the hidden hand?
Who could decide
the hidden hand?
Who would deny
the hidden hand?
Who holds all the strings?
The hidden hand
controls everything.
The hidden hand.
Who could
hidden hand.
man is the ghost of the age. The hand that holds the pen that writes the lines on the page. That holds the script and directs the play. That waves the actors on and off the stage. Some call him progress, others predestination. Some class struggle, others supply and demand. Some say providence, others say evolution. By ending it, you know it is all the same.
So interesting. And I really hear now too, just the human experience side of this album, you know. And then the final track, Down by the Water, is there anything you want people to know about this one before we play it?
The image that opens this song, the ashes falling into the waves, is something that comes from my family, actually. There's a bay off one of the Bocas. These are the small islands between Trinidad and Venezuela. And it's a bay where a lot of my family's ashes have been put to rest. They had a family cottage there when they were growing up, and it was very dear to them. And so some of my uncle's ashes have been put there. But I guess the song really is about the hope that after this life is done, you know, and the veil is lifted, that that, you know, we'll see once again those whom we have loved in this life and lost.
Oh, I love that. Man, it has been such a pleasure hearing about your music and just the history of Calypso. You've done such a beautiful job of talking about it, really. And thank you so much for being here and for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Grace, for having me.
My pleasure. Okay, so before we go, what projects are you working on or do you have coming up, and any upcoming tours?
Oh, sure. So the upcoming project, we do have an upcoming tour. It's starting actually tonight in Toronto, and we're going to be going through several Canadian cities out west and out here in Ontario. And then we have a couple of shows in Europe, in Scandinavia, and in Germany and the Netherlands. So from now to mid-August, we're going to be on the road quite a bit. But I have been writing a new body of work. Right now, tentatively, I'm calling it Calypso Contramundum, which my bandmates think the Latin title, which means versus the world, is a little pretentious. But it's a Calypso versus... So Calypso versus the world. And I, you know, most of my previous records have been, you know, they've mused over these deep, wider themes like mortality on this last record, the shortness of life, the brevity of life, on history and the weight it throws on the present and the previous one and et cetera. But this one is an attempt to really return Calypso to its catchy roots as a source of like immediate social commentary, you know, humorous social commentary. So for this one, it looks at things that are much more specific. There's a song called A Pill for That, which is kind of about the machinations of the pharmaceutical industry. Another song is about, you know, this like our tech and like screen addiction, you know, and for this one, I really set out, I thought, thought, hey, if Roaring Lion or Atelier de Han or one of these great Calypsonians of the past was here today, how would they write and what would they write about this bizarre, odd world that we live in now?
Amen. Yeah, that's a great question. I love that. I'm excited to hear it. When do you think it's going to come out?
Well, being a bit of a procrastinator, I was hoping...
I can relate.
I'm going to say that next spring. And,
okay.
But, you know, most of my promises about the timely delivery of things are empty ones. So we'll see what... I'm hoping for a release before next summer.
Okay, amazing. And where can people find you online, follow you on social media, all that good stuff?
Sure. We have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. Then, you know, all the music you can hear on Spotify or on Bandcamp or just on our website. I think you can listen to all our stuff. There's a YouTube page. I'm still wrapping my head, honestly, around the social media thing. It's something I struggle with, but yeah, from time, you know, I am trying to get better at, you know, making people aware of what we're doing.
Sure, a lot of hats to wear too.
But yeah, you can find on all the typical social media platforms, there's stuff.
Amazing. And it's Kobo Town, KOBO, and then town.
Yes.
Well, Drew, thanks again. This has been such a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure's been mine. Thank you.
And that concludes the interview portion of today's show. I am going to leave you with the final two tracks off of Carnival of Ghosts that we talked about today. The first being Down by the Water, and then the second track and the last track is called Bourne's Road. I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's been listening and who tunes into the show regularly, or even if this is your first time. We're so glad you're here. Hope you enjoyed our journey today to Trinidad and Tobago with Drew Gonzalez from Kobo Town. And if you like today's episode and want to hear more, you can find us on all streaming platforms under Travel Notes and online and social media under Travel Notes Podcast. Feel free to shoot me a message and say hi and where you're from and request a genre of music or a destination. I want to say a huge thank you to WOHM Radio 96.3 FM for broadcasting the show every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And until next time, wishing you peace, harmony, and adventure in this crazy adventure of life. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Because you're Taking the life is what to protect.
Bones.